And that's the works that we have done ourselves. You can't take your wealth or your houses or your cars or your bank accounts or anything else. And we know this. And Solomon said, everything I have is of no profit to me, because I'm not going to have it forever. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul wrote about wealth. 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul wrote about wealth. In 1 Timothy 6 and verse 10, the Apostle Paul writes, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." Now, is it wrong to be wealthy? No. Where does the wrong come in? Where does the sin lie? In the love of money. When you love it above your own soul, when you love it above your family, when you love it above anything and everyone else. The love of money is the root of all evil. People have been murdered for their money. I remember when I was in high school, and I don't know if you remember when the Air Jordans came out, Michael Jordan's name brand shoes. And I remember reading on the news that a kid in Pennsylvania or New York or somewhere was shot, and they stole his shoes. The love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Verse 17 of 1 Timothy 6. Paul then says, "Charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy." Now, I don't know the exact date, but I remember the year was 1929. It was the month of October, and the stock market crashed. And do you know what happened? Hundreds of people leapt to their deaths. They jumped out of 10 and 20 and 30-story buildings. They committed suicide. Why? Why? They lost their money. They lost their God. They put all their trust in their physical wealth, and it failed them. Does that sound like the good life to you? Does that sound like the good life to you? That's what the world says is the good life. Oh, let's live the good life. Get all the financial success that you can while you can until it fails you. And then what are you going to do? Where are you going to turn? Another thing that man... What's another way that a man says you live the good life? Wealth buys what? Pleasure. Pleasure. Wealth buys pleasure. Uncontrolled fulfillment of pleasures. We read Ecclesiastes 2 in verse 10. Solomon said, "I had everything before me. What my eyes desired, I kept not from them. Every joy of heart was at my disposal." Solomon knew what it meant to enjoy worldly pleasure. He knew what it meant to have all the pleasures of the world at his fingertips. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 3 tells us that he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. So he had 1,000 women. He had 1,000 women at his fingertips, which means if he would have engaged in intimacy with one woman a day, it would have taken him over 3 years to get back to the first one. Over 3 years to get back to the first one. But I want to ask the question. How long does worldly pleasure actually last? How long does worldly pleasure actually last? I mean, think about it. How much can you eat? I like to eat. And I'm trying to slow down. In fact, I've lost 6 pounds. Yay for me. But how much can you sit down at a table and actually eat before you... And you got to break out the Tums and the Rolaids and the Pepto-Bismol and whatever else it is that you eat or drink because you ate too much. How long does that pleasure last before it becomes pain? And as far as sexual pleasure, how long does that last? Especially if you involve yourself in the sin of fornication. If you're having sex outside of a God-approved marriage, how long does that pleasure last? As soon as it's over, what are you thinking? Oh, am I pregnant? Boy, I don't. And you're worried for 3 days, 2 weeks, a month. Oh, am I afraid? Did I get what? What's going to happen if I am? Then you, if you are, you have another decision to make. Well, should I have the baby or should I kill it? That's murder. And our society has given over to cold-blooded murder of innocent children. How long did that pleasure last? Is it still fun? Does that sound like the good life? Do I have a disease? Am I going to die in 10 or 12 years because I involved in that sexual pleasure outside of a God-approved marriage because I didn't listen to God? Sounds like fun, doesn't it? That's really living the good life, isn't it? Oh, boy. What? No. No. Yeah, that's real fun. Another thing the world sees in pleasure, that they see pleasure in, is found in Proverbs 23 and verse 29. And that's the use of alcohol and drugs. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 29. And again, we read the words of a wise man. Proverbs 23 and verse 29. Listen to what he says about the drunkard, about the one who uses these mind-altering substances. Who hath woe? What's woe? You see the little word, W-O-E. What's that mean? Troubles, pain, sorrow, frustration, grief, agony, distress. Woe! Woe! Who hath this? Who has this pain and this trouble? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? You ever talk to a drunk? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine. They that go to seek mixed wine. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women. There's that fulfilling sexual pleasure outside of a God-approved marriage. Your thoughts are altered. You can't make wise decisions if your thoughts are altered with alcohol or drugs. They'll seek after strange women. Thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Oh, the troubles of a drunkard, the troubles of those who use alcohol and drugs. Where did this headache come from? How did I get this black eye? Why are my ribs sore? I can't remember a thing from last night. Does this sound like a good life to you? I tell you what. On February 20th of this year, 2003, about 6.5, 7 months ago, there was a lot of people who thought they were going to live a good life. They went to a bar called The Station in Woolwich, Rhode Island, to hear a semi-famous band named Great White. And boy, they were having fun, and they were getting drunk and carousing around, and they were cheering. And the band set off with some fireworks because the fire in that nightclub, and they were having so much fun until 100 of them burned to death. Does that sound like a good life to you? I got looked on the internet as I was looking up these facts, and there's a story in there about a group of survivors who went to see them again. Again! They did it again! They went to Allentown, Pennsylvania to see this band in another nightclub. And one lady said, I want them to see what they did to me. I have third-degree burns over 30% of my body. And she was blaming the band, and she was blaming the bar owner, and she was blaming all these people except the person in the mirror. You know, she wouldn't have had those scars if she would have listened to God and not been there in the first place. Well, that sounds like the good life to me. Doesn't it you? In Hebrews chapter 11, there's a man who chose the true good life. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. I know we're kind of 15 minutes into this, but feel free to offer comments. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. What do we know about Moses? He was where? In royalty. Where at? He was a slave in Egypt, but before that, he was in royalty. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He was the grandson of the most powerful king of the most powerful nation at that time. He had the best of everything. He had wealth. He had fame. He could have had pleasure. He could have chosen it all. All the things we're talking about that the world says is the good life. But he refused it. He refused it because he knew that the pleasures of sin last how long? A short time. What were we talking about? How long can you eat before it turns to pain? How long does sexual pleasure last outside of a God-approved marriage before you begin to worry? What about alcohol and drugs? How long does that pleasure last? They only last for a short time, and then there's payment to be made. Esteeming, verse 26, esteeming the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. He knew what was waiting. He knew the choice to make. He knew that being a servant of God was better than being a king in the world. By faith. He was taught it. His own mother was his nurse. He was taught it from an early age. Did I answer that right? So man's ideas of the good life are foolish. They don't last. They don't offer that long-lasting sustain. And by the way, have you ever seen the amount of money that these people spend? $7,000-$8,000 for a pair of shoes. $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $120,000 for a car. $4 or $5 million for a house. And they keep buying and buying and buying and buying. But you know what? They're not happy. They're like Solomon. I have all these things, all these possessions, all this wonderful wealth, and it's useless. And we envy them. Why? Why? Well, what is God's plan for living the good life? Well, turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. You see, God has a plan. He has told us how to live the truly good life. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, his lips that they speak no guile, let him eschew evil and do good, let him seek peace and ensue it. To love life with intelligence and purpose. To live in such a way as when you come to the end of your life, you can look back without regret. You know what? I had a good life. And I really love the choices that I made. To love life with purpose and intelligence. To see good days filled with profit and value. How many days do we live in which we waste time? We waste opportunity. How many times do we go through a day and we just, I don't feel like doing anything today. No profit of no value. If you will love life and see good days with profit and value, here's what you do. Avoid evil speech. Avoid evil speech. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Again, the Apostle Paul writing, or the Spirit writing by the hand of the Apostle Paul. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, as we see a lot of good instructions for godly living. In Ephesians 4, verse 29, he says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. What's corrupt communication? Evil. Filthy. In fact, Colossians 3:8 says, along with the things that we're to put off, is anger, and wrath, and malice, and blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. That which shows you to be corrupt. That which shows you to be filthy. What is filthy? What are some examples of filthy communication? Movies, television, as a whole, yes. It's everywhere, absolutely. And filthy communication includes such things as dirty jokes. Why do you think they call them dirty jokes? That's what they are. It's filthy communication, corrupt communication, jokes that involve sexual overtones, jokes that degrade a person's race or religion or nationality, jokes that instead of building up and encouraging, they tear down. That's filthy communication. Cursing, swearing, using those vile, disgusting curse words. You know why people use curse words? You ever heard somebody curse and it just seems like every other word out of their mouth is a curse word? Do you know why they curse? Do you know why they swear? Because they're not intelligent enough to think of something else. Some for attention, absolutely. But some because they're not intelligent enough to think of something else. With, I don't, how many words are in the English language? Is there an English teacher here? How many words are in the English language? 10,000, 100,000, 300,000? And they can't tell you a story or they can't make a comment without using a curse word? Apparently, they're not very intelligent. Think about the news. You watch the news. How many stories do they tell? How many stories do they go through and situations do they reveal? And yet, not one curse word. Why? Maybe they're a little more intelligent than the other person. You can read books. I can tell you the story of Hamlet and not use a curse word. Why do they use it? Because they're not intelligent. If they were, they could find another way of communication. Gossip. Oh, boy. Gossip. That's a big one. What is gossip? What's the definition of gossip? Any ideas? Here. Yeah, talking behind somebody's back about something that may or may not be true. It may or may not be true. And do you know what gossip can do? Gossip can destroy a person's good name. Gossip can kill a person's character. You can shatter a lifelong friendship over something that may or may not be true. Gossip is filthy communication and should not be named among the saints. Oh, complaining. Complaining. Boy, everybody's getting quiet. Why is that? Complain. You ever complain? Hello. You ever complained about, have to go to work. Boy, that boss of mine complained about, I don't know what I'm going to do with these kids. Oh, how about this one? Oh, my wife, do you know what she did? My husband, I tell you what, I can't believe it. Complaining. Not good. Not good. These are things we need to work on. Backbiting. Backbiting. Actually, this kind of is under gossip, but backbiting is actually talking behind someone's back with the purpose of tearing them down. With the purpose of destroying them. reviling, lying, injurious words, blasphemy, and these are just a few. No wonder James talked about the tongue in James chapter 3. So that's one thing we need to do is avoid evil speech. You mean there's more? Mm-hmm. Anybody have any comments on this? That's pretty good, man. Yeah. What are we supposed to do? Let's say someone comes to you and says, "Did you hear about what so-and-so did or what so-and-so said or how so-and-so's acting?" Or what should you say? Oh, absolutely. Don't pass it on down the line and say, "Hell, oh, really? Let's go talk to so-and-so." Yeah, at least you're honest. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Another thing we need to do is eschew evil and do good. Eschew. What's the word eschew mean? Avoid. Avoid. And actually, it's to hate with such degree that you even hate the thought of. That's when the book of Job says that Job was a man who eschewed evil. If he even heard about it, he was going the other way. He didn't even want to think about it. To hate with such degree that you hate the very thought of, and then do good. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 15. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 15. Now, doing good in the world, guys? Is that how we do good in this? Doing good in what God says. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 15. "But as he which has called you as holy, so be ye holy. So be ye holy in all manner of conversation. In every aspect of your lifestyle, strive for the perfection of God. Because it is written, 'Be ye holy, for I am holy.'" Be ye holy, for I am holy. Set apart, sanctified. You be the same way. You be the same way. In 1 Peter chapter 2, just flip over to chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. Listen to how he describes us. "You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar or special people, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which has not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy." Special, holy, a royal generation, a priesthood unto God. That includes every Christian in this building. Therefore, we should live like it. We should talk like it. We should walk like it. In verse 21 of chapter 2, 1 Peter, just drop down a few verses to verse 21. "For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled not again, when he suffered he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judges righteously." How does it describe Jesus? What did he do? Verse 22. No sin. Can we be sinless? Too late. We can't be sinless. It's not possible, is it? Can we strive to be? Can we work at it? Can we be better in the future than we have yesterday? If we want to. If we want to, we can work at it. Neither was guile or deceit found in his mouth. When he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. He wasn't seeking revenge. There's another one. He wasn't seeking revenge. We need to follow that example. Absolutely. And we need to remember that. We need to keep that in mind, that vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. I will repay. You give place on the wrath. You forgive if you want to be forgiven. Remember those words? Another thing, or the last thing we need to do, is seek peace. Seek peace. What does it mean to seek peace? You do everything you can to keep everything peaceful. You actively work for it. Seeking peace is not just desiring peace. Oh, I desire to have peace with God. I desire to have peace with my fellow man. What are you doing to actively work for it? What are you doing to seek it with all your heart and with all your being? Seek peace. In 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and in verse 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. The Apostle Paul, as he concludes this letter in 2 Corinthians 13, verse 11, he writes saying, "Finally, brethren, farewell." 2 Corinthians 13, 11. "Be perfect, be of good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you." Live in peace. In Colossians 3:15 it says, "Let the peace of God rule in your hearts. Let it have control and authority over you." Live in peace. Peace with God. Peace with self. Peace with family. Peace with all men. Turn to Romans chapter 12, verse 18. Romans chapter 12 and verse 18. In Romans 12, verse 18. "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you," or as much as on your part, "live peaceably with all men, friends, neighbors, co-workers, family members, enemies." I know you're going to find this as a shock, but there are just some people who live for conflict. I know that's hard to believe, but there are some people who live for conflict. They live for the argument. They live to cause you frustration. "As much as is on your part, live peaceably with all men." In other words, don't do anything to make the feud bigger. You be peaceful. In Jeremiah 29, verse 7, there's a beautiful scripture that describes this perfectly and what it can do. As Jeremiah sends a letter to those who were carried away captive to Babylon, in Jeremiah 29 and verse 7, he gives instructions. And one of those instructions is, "Seek the peace of the city, whither I have caused you to be carried away captive, and pray unto the Lord for it. For in the peace thereof shall you have peace." That's a beautiful definition of seeking peace. You actively work for it. You do your best to make sure there's peace in that land, and you pray for it. Because in their peace, you will have peace. Any comments or any thoughts on that? Keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That's peace among our Christian brethren. Peace with the church of God. Now, can I'll go ahead and ask this question. Can we have peace at any price? No. There are some things, in fact, doctrinal, I don't want to say this. The doctrine of Christ cannot be compromised for peace. It can't be done. We must abide in the doctrine of Christ, and anyone who steps outside of it, anyone who doesn't walk by that same rule, we cannot have peace. They must be told, you're walking outside the rule. Not peace at any price, but we must actively work for it. One more thought. God's plan for living the good life is reliable. It's time-tested over thousands of years. In fact, that quote from 1 Peter comes from Psalm 34, verses 12 through 14. It was good in David's time, 3,000 years ago. It was good when Peter wrote it 2,000 years ago. And it's good in our time, and it will be good advice and sound advice until time on earth ends. Anybody have anything else? It could mean maturity. It could mean completeness. Growing into the full stature, the measure of the man of Christ. Absolutely. I do appreciate your kind attention. And I do appreciate the comments that I received. I thank you.